there's danger everywhere. But danger had never looked quite like this before.
Can you keep a secret?
Based on shocking true events.
This girl, Rena Virk, she's been missing for 3 days.
Emmy Award nominee Riley Keough.
Young girls were the ones we were supposed to protect.
Academy Award nominee Lily Gladstone.
Can't be.
Not be protected from.
A Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays only on Hulu.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by a severed head. Or maybe it is. I'm sure you've heard of this cool new subscription service called Hunt a Killer, the interactive investigation delivered to your doorstep each month. You should check it out, huntakiller.com. Their form of storytelling puts you into the serial killer's mind. It's like you're living in your favorite true crime series. They've created a fictional world for true crime fans. You actually live inside of the story. And if investigating isn't your thing, you probably know someone who would love this as a gift. As a special offer to our listeners, they provided us with a 10% off code. That offer code is SIDEWAYS. So go to huntakiller.com and enter the code SIDEWAYS.
Thinking Sideways.
I don't get it.
I brought the aliens.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
I don't know.
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Thinking Sideways, the podcast. I am Devin, joined most weeks by
Joe
and
Steve.
We're going to talk about a mystery tonight.
Oh,
we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, it's surprising. And I'm pretty sure actually this was a listener suggestion at one point, but I can't find it on the list. So if it was, I'm really sorry, mysterious listener, for not being able to find you. But if it wasn't, yeah, take it.
Yeah.
If this is on the list, you probably can't find it because it's misspelled.
Probably.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about because I went looking for it too. And I tried some different spellings. Couldn't. Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh,
so
well.
Sorry, whoever you were.
Yeah.
We probably would have misspelled your name anyway.
Yeah, or mispronounced it.
That too.
Yeah. No doubt.
So this week we're going to talk about this thing called the Markovian Parallax Denigrate, which, you know, I think we'll probably call the MPD.
That works.
Sure.
Or the Markovian.
Sounds like it's something out of Tron at that point.
MPD. Realistically, I'm not going to say it too many times because it's just a mouthful.
It kind of is. Yeah, I've been pondering the meaning of it all.
Yeah. So the
There's
a quick overview here, kind of, and that is that we're going to talk about the internet or the pre-internet. We're really just like pre-internet spam. I don't know. I don't feel like there's a very
primordial spam?
Yeah, primordial spam.
It's amazing how quickly somebody thought about spam, you know,
before
the internet didn't even exist and they came up with it already.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't think there's actually a really good short, you know, cliff notes of this. So do you guys want to just jump right in?
That's probably the best way to go about this.
Okay, cool. I will say that there's somebody in the middle of it, but we'll talk about that later. And this is often called one of the very first internet mysteries, which means that I've finally done it.
You found the very first mystery?
Found the first internet mystery.
Yeah, it's so early. The internet didn't really quite exist
yet. It wasn't really the internet, yeah. Actually, so we are going to talk about this thing that's pre-internet. It's called Usenet. Right, that's how you say it, right?
Is it Usenet or Usenet?
That is a good question.
I've wondered about this for years. It was because use, as in if it started with an H, almost use, or is it Usenet?
I think it's Usenet just because that's easier to pronounce.
Usenet.
Yeah, so it was Usenet. Was USC, was that an acronym for university something or another? Or was it just use as in use? We're going to use this net.
Or did it have a use?
Yeah.
Another mystery.
So Usenet.
What about
daggers for?
There's also UselessNet.
Yeah.
That's when your Wi-Fi goes down.
I think maybe it was the user network, Usenet, would be my guess. But I don't. Please don't quote me on that. And if somebody knows, please don't make fun of me for not knowing, because I'm sorry.
I never saw it called out, really, so that's why I was curious.
Yeah. This Usenet or Usenet was created in 1979, though it didn't really... It was conceptualized in 1979 and then became publicly, quote-unquote, publicly available in 1980. As with the real internet, Usenet was made for universities. The University of North Carolina and Duke University were the first early adopters of this system. And just for those of you who don't know, the World Wide Web, which is... The internet is a weird thing. I don't think people conceptualize of the internet a lot, but there are parts of the internet that we don't know exist. There's quantum web and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating. If you're interested in it, you should go read on it. But the World Wide Web is something that's slightly different from the internet, even. But the World Wide Web took shape in 1988. And that was the first direct IP connection between Europe and North America. That's when that first IP connection was established, was in 88.
Mm-hmm.
So Usenet is about 8 years ahead of its time. And granted, there were some other kind of proto internet network situations before then, dating back to, I think, the 50s even.
ARPANET?
Yeah, 1969,
Those are all military.
ARPANET. Yeah, military
kind of
or just on-site local networks that were all connected to each other.
And then, even before the internet, there was stuff you could call BBSs if you had a modem. Remember modems?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, man, how could they get any faster?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, I had a 300 baud modem and I'd dial up these BBSs and stuff and I'm watching the characters going across the screen. And then I upgraded to a 1200 baud modem and, oh, wow. Wow, it was so cool.
Yeah, I remember the pain of trying to watch an image appear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even, I was young enough, it was anything dirty. I'm on National Geographic looking at giraffes. Mm-hmm. Man.
And Carta.
Gonna take forever.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For the layman, we can say that Usenet was just a mail server. It was part mail server, part file transfer, and part kind of announcement board that'd be similar to an early forum situation, kind of like Reddit or...
Yeah, the bulletin boards were that way. They were kind of like forums also.
So my real quick question, because of course now you can't see images of this stuff very easily, but most of what I understand is it was purely character driven. It was text driven. It wasn't like today where there's words and pictures.
Yeah, there's no formatting.
It was.
It's just words.
I think there sometimes they had a bumper, maybe a border around something, but I don't even think that. I think it was
ASCII imagery if there was imagery.
Very much so, it was
totally just text based.
Okay. I was pretty sure of that, but I wanted to double check. Just being as old as it was, I was pretty sure that couldn't be supported. So, thank you.
You probably could use FTP to send images, not huge high res ones, but that wouldn't have been
on the announcement bulletin board sort of situation.
Oh, no, not
that
at all.
Would have had to have been file transfer.
That's something you got to explicitly say, I want to transfer this to my own PC.
Ready? Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready for this incoming thing? Because it's going to take up all your RAM.
Actually, it was probably faster at that point just to put it on the 3.5-inch floppy drive and mail it to them.
Probably.
Or print it out line by line.
It's hard for our listeners who are all young whippersnappers to appreciate this.
Yeah. The good news is I know that a number of our listeners are not.
Not all of them are that young.
So many of them will remember stuff like this.
All right, so old people, should we get back to the story?
Oh, let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was doing a little searching for information on this one. And I came
on ARPANET?
Well, and on the Markovian denigrate in general. And And I came across this paper. It was an academic paper. They were talking about the relationship between Usenet and the DARPA and DARPANET.
Mm-hmm.
And because in those days, Usenet was always trying to interface and interact with DARPANET.
Mm-hmm.
And DARPANET was
DARPA or ARPA?
Or ARPANET, I guess. Yeah, it would be. I guess it would be ARPA. Yeah.
Okay.
ARPA. So the ARPA, they would be trying to get into ARPANET, and ARPANET was very exclusive, very choosy for obvious security reasons.
ARPANET, for those who are unaware, is a packet switching network that was for the military, basically.
Yeah,
for the government.
Yeah, the advanced research projects. Mm-hmm. And so. This paper was hilarious because it was all about the relationship between the two and how it was an example of like sort of gender bias, because to them the authors of this paper, who were obviously somewhere from the fever swamps of academia, ARPA represented like the masculine, and here was Usenet, the feminine, trying to get access, and here was ARPA going No. Yeah. And just being mean for the sake of being mean. So, you know.
You mean like it is
and
today.
This was somebody who, in one of our universities, writing a huge freaking research paper on this issue of ARPA being mean and kind of like masculine.
Bully.
So yeah. It's not a new issue, kids.
So the trolls have always been here.
Always been here, Yeah. Where there is electronic mail, there is spam.
Naturally.
Of course. And Usenet had a mail system and a forum system, which were kind of... It's my understanding that the way that replies worked is it was kind of like emailing to the board almost, because it was your username was your email address, basically.
Yeah, I don't know if you could like email somebody specifically back or if it just got posted publicly to the board.
It did, but I think it was like through the email. It's hard to... really grasp.
Parts out exactly how it worked.
Yeah.
But what was really nice about this system is there were no links that you could click on.
Yeah.
So that's
nice.
A really great thing. Yeah. It's like, hey, your password is all messed up. Click on this link and give us your password and we'll fix everything
None
for you.
None of that.
No, exactly.
Yeah. So in 1996, Usenet developed a unique spam issue, and it was spam on its news feeds in the comment section mostly.
Comment spam, the worst.
But also on boards.
Mm-hmm.
News feeds were server specific. So the way that Usenet worked is that each like little community had its own server, mm-hmm. but the servers talked to each other. So you would get, if somebody posted something on like the everybody news bulletin, you could specify that news bulletin would be shared on all of the servers. Mm-hmm. They would communicate and infect each other almost, which is kind of what happened with this. Well, these, I guess. The posts were subjected Markovian parallax denigrate.
These are the spam posts.
Yeah, the spam posts. And the text of these spam messages were all different. There were reportedly hundreds, like within just on one day.
So it's kind of a giant
attack. August 5th, yeah, that this happened. Most of them were subjected Markovian parallax denigrate, but some of them just had those words in them that people kind of attribute those to maybe being part of this as well, but it's hard to tell. And the messages sounded something like this. I'm going to have one.
Appeared to be real words.
They are real words.
Real random words.
So I'm going to have one of you guys read this thing.
Okay,
we got a Rochambeau for this.
Oof!
All right.
Damn, I get it.
All right, okay, go for it.
Jitterbugging McKinley A. Break Newtonian Infer Ka Update Cohen Air Collaborate Ruse Sports Writing Rococo Invocate Tassel Shadflower Debbie Sterling Pathogenesis Escrutar Adventitious Novo ITT Most Chairperson Dwight Herzog Differ Pinpoint Dunk McKinley Pendant Firelight Uranus Episodic Medicine Diddy Crag Flogging Variac Brotherhood Web Impromptu File Countenance Inheritance Cohesion Refrigerate Morphine Napkin Inlay Gennaro Nameable Yearbook Hark.
Okay, first off, you mispronounced Rococo.
Of all the things I mispronounced in there, that's the one you go for?
Oh, there are a few others.
Thanks,
yeah,
dude.
Okay.
Okay.
That was now, the one that really bothered me.
Now, listeners, you listen to this podcast.
Please, please, take the time. Go back 30 seconds and listen to it again.
Listen to it like 5 times in a row.
Yeah, this is pretty typical
actually,
for us, really.
Please, somebody make that your ringtone.
Yeah.
You are going to confuse some people.
Yeah, for real. So you, like us, probably immediately assume that this is a code of some kind.
Mm. Has anybody tried to crack it?
Let me put this on the back burner.
I gave it about 10 seconds and thought I decided, it's not worth it.
I gave it more than that, but let's put it on the back burner.
But let's put it on the back burner, and we'll talk about it in theories, okay?
Okay.
All right.
The users of Usenet, predictably, were the same type of people who are users of, like, Reddit these days. And predictably, when there were hundreds of these gibberish messages spamming the daylights out of them, they decided to take action and launch a full armchair investigation.
Does that mean they lost their minds?
Yeah, I think they did. A lot of them did. And just like the users of Reddit, they lost interest, like, within 2 days.
Yeah. This is not the sort of thing that really grips you and holds you for a long time.
Yeah, it's not. Which is why we're doing an episode on it.
Well, of course. Interestingly, I mean, for these guys, really, it was. You got to remember that this was like probably the first mass spamming out there. So
it's a new thing.
We're totally used to it now. We just ignore it. But for these guys, it probably was an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah, I probably
that
just
they got bored
like,
with.
I think. You know, one of the things that a lot of people just assume is like, hey, okay, somebody's messing up. Something messed up. You know, the way that file got transferred to my server is scrambled. So, whoops. Oh, well. But then when they started talking, they were like, no, these things are showing up everywhere. And so they were a little intrigued, but they didn't really get very far. End of story. Just kidding.
Not quite.
10 years later, and 10 years ago, when we're recording now, so even longer.
The internet had matured somewhat.
It had become the internet.
Yeah. Let's be honest, the internet has never matured.
Yeah. Well, there is that.
Let's be fair.
You know, it's interesting. I can't remember the guy's name. He was like an academic type guy, and he was talking about the future of this internet thing, you know, that was going to come up, all these people
Mio
like,
Okaku
online.
Or whatever his name is?
I can't remember his name, but he was talking about what it's going to be like. It's just like to be all these people that will be online, and because everybody shares the same interests and because everybody wants to be there, it'll be a very positive community. And,
I know who you're talking about.
You know
yeah.
what I'm talking about. Yes. You can't read it without laughing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Wrong, dude.
Sorry, dude. Yeah. That one didn't come true.
So 10 years later and 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Our forefathers wrote. Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
one.
Websites like, you know, Cracked. Cracked was pretty popular about 10 years ago.
They're still popular.
They're still
I like
pretty
Cracked.
Popular, but they were really popular then. Started the trend of the list-based articles. One of the most popular type was like, hey, 5 Wikipedia articles to give you the creeps. Which
check out this new thing. Number 3 is amazing.
They weren't titling them like that, though.
I know.
Great. I miss those days.
I hate those. What do you mean miss those days? Are those articles still come up? Wait, you talking about the number 3 will amaze you?
Yeah, I miss the days when we didn't have that.
Oh, me too.
When clickbait wasn't a thing.
Yeah. Crack does not do that. I want to say.
No, they don't.
Everybody else does that. And
you know what? Can I just make a complaint real quick about the internet?
Okay.
What I don't understand is
just
that.
Just one thing.
Okay. This is just the only thing I'm going to complain about at the moment is that I will see an article and I will think, okay, I'll look at it. I know it's clickbait. And the thing that they are putting in the very beginning to entice you to click is never actually in the list.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. No. I was looking at one of those just yesterday. It was like 11 NFL players in their fantastic, stupid mansions.
Yes.
And they had this aerial photo of this incredible mansion that's surrounded by a man-made lake with these man-made islands.
And it wasn't in it.
And it was not in the article.
So dumb.
It's not dumb. It's annoying.
Rein it in.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Where
said
were we?
Creepy Wikipedia articles. You know, the articles about creepy Wikipedia articles.
They're all creepy, ask me.
Included one of them. I wasn't able to find the original one, but it included the Wikipedia page of Markovian parallax denigrade.
When you say you couldn't find, you mean the cracked list?
I couldn't find whatever the list that it was on.
Okay,
that it was featured on. I'm sure it was featured on a number of them.
Oh, yeah.
the Wikipedia page for MPD was deleted because there were, quote, no sources. Furthermore, Wikipedia states that the mere existence of this spam doesn't really mean that there should be a Wikipedia article on it.
I suppose they have a point there.
Which I guess is is fair.
I'm sorry, I looked at the Wikipedia page. It was pretty bad.
I've seen worse, though, and they're still around. So.
Yeah, but those are usually self-curated pages. The ones that are worse than this are the ones that say, I'm an actor, and I'm going to write all about myself in the third person.
Yeah. Until they get deleted, yeah.
Yeah. So this Wikipedia article, was, as far as I can tell on the Wayback Machine, was created on September 13th, 2004. And then it was deleted, finally, on May 10th, 2009 from Wikipedia. I guess remember that date? It's vaguely important, maybe. Could be important.
Oh, 5, 10,
could be interesting in one of our theories.
All right.
And it won't surprise you that 7chan got a hold of this tidbit and decided to start digging.
You're going to tell us about 7chan and 4chan and all those
guys? We're just going to take a quick little detour on our tour of the internet.
Okay.
7chan is kind of related to 4chan. The chans, quote unquote, there are many, started out as 2chan.net, which was an image board based out of Japan. 4chan was the Western version of Japan's 2chan.
Really? Mm-hmm. I had no idea that.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
And then, I just stayed away from it.
And then 7chan is kind of... 7chan is kind of the rival of 4chan. They have, like, civil wars back and forth, blah, blah, blah.
They choose 7 because it's a prime number?
I don't know. They both exist on this kind of limbo area between the internet as, like, fear the government and stuff and just use our normal browsing and every once in a while incognito mode. Where we exist on the internet and where the deep web is.
The dark web?
Deep web.
Well, so is there a difference between the dark and the deep?
There's a difference.
Yeah.
Yes. So the chans kind of exist in this middle ground where you, for a lot of the content, especially if you're browsing, you don't necessarily want to just go.
So don't do this at work is what you're saying?
Definitely don't do it on at work. Although I will tell you that my place of work, I didn't know I was clicking on a link that was taking me to 7chan. Check your links, guys. but I was allowed to get onto this board and immediately was like, no, right? But there's a firewall at work that won't allow me to go on a College Humor.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't exist for 7chan, apparently.
Yeah.
Mine does the same stupid thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think they just assume, like, well, nobody would be so dumb to go on to 4chan and 7chan.
They just never heard of them, probably.
Yeah, but just don't, I mean, don't do it at work. I mean, you know, whatever. Basically, 7chan is, like, pretty lax on the law following. It's all anonymous-based, and they, anything goes as far as posting.
Is this, like, run by the FBI or something?
Probably.
Yeah, no doubt.
Also, in the interest of protecting the show, just real quick, I will say that I have no side in the 4chan and 7chan war, so please just ignore us.
Trolls disband.
Yeah.
That's true. No, I've heard of you guys, but I really don't care one way or the other, so, yeah.
Cool.
And I wish you both well, and I'm sure you're both sides are right.
Some blogs that I think saw this stuff on 7chan started to do research, none of which I can find actual links to, but I can follow dead links to, so I don't think these blogs exist anymore, which is fine. It's been 10 years.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't expect them to. I think they started doing research in late 2008. Then in spring of 2009, one of the bloggers was able to find one remaining post, spam post, thanks to Google, because Google has actually retained public archives of a lot of Usenet stuff.
So there was only one surviving piece of this copy of the spam on the interwebs.
Mm-hmm,
that was it.
And the one that we read, that was it. Yeah. There were a couple that they found that didn't have the subject line, that just had one word maybe interspersed. But of this specific one, there's only the one that exists still.
So we've retained one copy of this spam message and one copy of the smallpox virus.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing.
Well, it's important, I think, to preserve this for, I don't know if there's one yet, but there should be a museum of spam on the internet.
I agree.
Yeah, there totally ought to be. And there will be if there isn't one already.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
We should start that.
Yeah, actually, it's a good idea.
So Google does have a public archive of like Usenet stuff. It's pretty interesting, actually. You can actually get a bit of a sense of what it was like a little bit. The message was from, again, because they had to have the email address associated with this, from Susan Lindauer at worf.uwsp.edu. whose like display name was Chris Brokerage, actually, but
that's interesting.
It seems that within maybe a week of the discovery of this email address being connected to that original spam post, the Wikipedia page was taken down.
This bit of spam for this email address, this is from August.
It's from that August 5th, 1996 date.
Okay, because that's
they
when
all
the big batch happened.
Yeah,
okay.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. The action of deleting this Wikipedia page was kind of swift. I mean, they do have this action in the Wikipedia process that's called swift deletion, and it's for things that are really, really offensive or awful, and that usually, they usually get within 24 hours, they'll delete those.
But why this one? I mean, because
but this one, they didn't do that. But they did within a week.
Which is actually pretty swift for Wikipedia because, I mean, I've watched them, you know, I've watched or looked at some of the logs of the various debates over, gee, should we delete this or not?
Yeah.
Sometimes the debate can go on for a while.
Yeah, eons. So the way that
not eons, but a while.
The way that this one happened is two Wikipedia users suggested that the article be deleted within less than 24 hours of each other, and then less than a week after that it was permanently deleted.
So somebody who knew Susan, maybe?
Maybe. I don't know. And Joe kind of dropped a little bit of a bombshell, but
of
you may be yelling at me right now because I've totally glossed over that email address. Okay. I'm going to start right here with a caveat that says this episode is not about 9/11. This episode is not about 9/11.
This
episode
is
not brought to you about 9/11. It's not about truthers. It's not about anything like that. So don't send us emails about that stuff. We're just talking about this one person. Don't go
who
crazy.
Who happens to be involved.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, we do have an email address. If you want to talk about 9/11, it's called bouncingrightbacktoyou@gmail.com. And if you don't get through right away, keep trying.
Yeah.
But yeah,
yeah,
you can reach us there for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It'll get straight to us.
Yeah.
Okay, but fine. The name Susan Lindauer may be familiar to you in that she is an anti-war activist and intense conspiracy theorist.
Very much so.
She has also been a journalist, a U.S. congressional staffer, and she is an author. Susan is the daughter of former Republican nominee for the governor of Alaska.
And his name was also Susan?
No.
Okay.
She started out as a journalist and then worked as a congressional staffer for two Oregon reps, actually.
Congressman. Peter DeFazio,
yes.
Ron Wyden.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Actually, and Wyden's a senator now, too, by the way.
He is, and he's great.
No, I don't know about that.
Then she was the press secretary for two other Democrats in Congress until 2002.
Yeah, something happened between 2001 and 2002.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
Not
something
quite
about
sure
like a
what.
Bend.
Yeah,
yeah,
so,
yeah. We'll get there, Joe.
Yeah.
In 1994, just after finishing up working for Congressman Wyden at that point, she started to socialize with some people, most notably Dr. Richard Fuis.
I think that's how it's pronounced, yeah.
Who is famous mostly for his patents.
Yeah, I gotta say, you know, this guy has a wiki page, and he is what truly a renaissance man, I would say, because he's a physician, also an inventor, and a very successful businessman.
Yep.
And apparently a spy.
Yeah, he's somehow apparently connected to the U.S. counterintelligence.
Can I just say something about the whole renaissance man thing?
Mm.
He may actually just be very good at getting his name on patents, Joe.
That might be it, too.
I work at a place that files a lot of patents, and there are certain guys who you can tell get consulted on things all the time and therefore get their name on it, because there's no way with the work that I know that they do that they could have that many frickin' patents in a short period of time.
Well, it might be renaissance man is maybe overstating a little bit, but all I want to say is this guy really
he's got an impressive
resume
list,
he's got his fingers in a lot of pies.
Okay.
I mean, really, wouldn't you say?
Yeah
So
for reasons I'm not totally clear on, Susan and Richard started meeting on a weekly basis to discuss diplomatic ties and Richard's, quote, infiltration, unquote, of a network of Syrian terrorists. I've read that Susan referred to Richard as her, quote, contact in the CIA, unquote, and that when someone asked him if he was, in fact, in the CIA, he said that he could neither confirm or deny that, and he couldn't discuss it further.
Yeah, which usually means that he's never been anywhere near the CIA. Yeah. Although in this guy's case, not necessarily so.
So I'm just going to go ahead and pause right here and say that I literally cannot tell what is truth and what is fiction when it comes to Susan. So
or Richard.
I'm just going to say...
Richard, some of the things he says, I question.
So I'm just going to say all of it and let you be the boss of deciding what you believe and what you don't believe. Susan started to claim that she had been harassed after meeting with Libyan officials to tell them that she didn't think they were responsible for the Flight 103 bombing in 1988, which was the Lockerbie bombing.
Yeah, big thing.
Yeah, I'm shocked that suddenly she was getting harassed for telling people that she didn't think they were responsible for it.
She was sure that the Gaddafi was framed for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eventually, Gaddafi did acknowledge responsibility for the whole thing.
Okay.
He did.
Susan was sure that neither Libya nor Syria were blamed for that incident. In 2000, when W was elected.
George W. Bush.
He selected Susan's second cousin as his chief of staff. Apparently, she went a little crazy.
The second cousin or Susan?
Susan went a little crazy. The second cousin was a guy. And started leaving him, his name was Card, started leaving him letters on his doorstep, basically offering to use her, quote, intelligent contacts, unquote, to negotiate a way out of the war in Iraq.
Mm.
Which everybody saw coming at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like 3 years away, but hey, okay.
Yeah. You may have guessed it already because I kind of hinted at before, but Susan is indeed a 9/11 truther, quote unquote truther, and she's been very vocal. She claims, as others do, that she had knowledge of the attack prior to it happening and she was ignored, I guess. Richard, for his part, Dr. Richard.
Richard, please.
Mm-hmm. Stopped talking to her after 9/11, basically saying that her views on 9/11 were malicious.
He also, another quote I heard from him was that her talk had taken a, what was the word, seditious bent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he didn't even want to be speaking with her anymore. And then in 2004, she was arrested by the FBI for acting as an unregistered agent of a foreign government. So it seems like she was maybe talking to some of the people she said she was talking to, though it was probably not as in much of a government capacity as she said it was. And so she came back and actually said, no, I'm actually a CIA asset. And they're, you know, throwing me under the bus to hide something about 9/11. They knew.
Oh, of course they did.
Right. So she was held about a year. And then she was declared unfit to stand trial because she had a lengthy delusional history.
Delusions of grandeur.
Yeah. And apparently there were some meds that she could have taken to make her fit, but she said, no, I'm not taking those pills. I'm not crazy.
And the prosecution really lobbied to have her that administered forcibly.
Yeah. Yeah. And then finally in 2009, basically the feds decided, you know what? This is not worth our time and energy, so we're just going to drop all the charges against her.
It makes you wonder why Dr. Richard Fleece was willing to spend so much time, like, hanging out with her. She was, but, you know, I mean, I'm not really sure, but...
I tell you all of this, not because this episode is about 9/11.
But there was that Susan Lindauer with the email address.
There was.
Yeah.
So there are a couple theories, really two. Two big theories.
Yeah.
Three. There are three theories about the Markovian parallax denigrate. But first, let's take a break.
Ooh, a break. Yeah, I can pee.
Opal has wants and needs. She wants your attention. She wants her food. She needs to destroy the squirrel that lives in the tree in front of her house. It would be fantastic if Opal could talk back to you, though. When you sit on the couch together and you tell her about your day, she looks at you with that understanding face, but the closest she comes to giving you valuable feedback is rubbing her head against you. And maybe just talking to Opal isn't enough. Maybe it's time to talk to another person. If you've ever thought about going to therapy, but found it too inconvenient, too expensive, or just too embarrassing to make it into an office, then give Talkspace a try. Talkspace is the online therapy company, and they make it easy to connect with a licensed therapist, handpicked just for you, for as little as $32 a week. Using Talkspace, you can text, audio, and video message your therapist as much as you want. Your Talkspace therapist can listen to you vent about work, or family, or explore relationships with people around you, and help put you on a path to a happier life. To sign up or learn more, go to Talkspace.com/sideways, and as a special offer to our listeners, you can use the coupon code SIDEWAYS to get $30 off your first month. That's sideways at Talkspace.com/sideways. Opal's needs are pretty simple because she's a cat. Yours aren't because you're a human.
And we're back. Let's talk about theories.
Let's.
Please.
Since we were just talking about old Susan.
I don't think she'd like to be referred to as old.
Yeah.
It was old.
I don't know how old
old.
She is.
O-L-E.
O-L-E.
Yeah. By the
old
way,
old Susan.
Old. Yeah. Is she still alive?
Yes.
Yeah. Does she have a website?
Yeah.
She's on a whole bunch of websites.
She's on the
she's
circuit.
She's alive and kicking and hosting talks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Talking about 9/11 and the truth and all that stuff. Yeah.
Well, at least her story.
So the first theory we're going to talk about is Susan really was a CIA asset, and she was posting coded messages on Usenet as early as 96. Susan was apparently actually meeting with Middle Eastern diplomats.
So that's what got her in trouble.
But this is actually like in her official capacity or just meeting with people?
That's a good question, Joe.
According to her, it was an official capacity as a back channel contact for the CIA, right?
Mm-hmm.
She will, if you watch her videos, which I really tried to watch.
They're hard to get through.
They're hard to get through. Yeah. She repeats a lot of the same words over and over and over as if the repetition of the word increases the truth of it. Mm-hmm. But she kept using the word back channel. A lot, and that was how she was contacting, I think she talked to, not Iran, it was Iraq,
mm-hmm.
And apparently got some money for doing so, mm-hmm. though she
from the Iraqis.
Denies mm-hmm. that she got money, which mm-hmm. is one of the things that landed her in hot water.
Yeah.
Because it appears she did not fill out the proper IRS form, which I had the number of written down, and I don't have any more.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... I mean, like I said, I can't tell what's true and what's not when it comes to her. So, and the other thing that people point to is that the revelation of Susan's name being attached to that spam does seem to coincide with the apparent wiping and or totally discrediting of the Wikipedia page and anything online mm-hmm. regarding it.
So Susan, maybe...
What was Susan doing in August of 1996 is what I want to know, because that seems like that would be when the important thing went down.
Mm-hmm. It would be, yeah.
And as far as I can tell, she wasn't doing of anything of note at that point. Is that correct?
And she was working for Karen Mosley Braun. Carol Mosley Braun, who was at the time a senator for Illinois. Is that true? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
But... The senator that she was working for didn't have any kind of nefarious CIA or black ops kind of seat on some council or anything that we knew about?
Now, she was actually a one-termer, and she was considered kind of a lightweight, and she wasn't really let near anything too serious.
She was too new to start with?
No, she was in Senate from 93 to 99.
Which is one Senate term. They're six-year terms.
That's right. I always forget. That's so sad.
Yeah.
Okay. So no, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Susan wasn't doing other stuff.
Doing other stuff. Okay.
She could have been, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. All she'd right, been around right. the I'll... hill for a while, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's 2 years that she's been talking to Mr. Robert Fweez or Freeze or however you say his name.
Yeah, Mr. Fweez, the doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, so on the other hand, Susan is kind of guano crazy, so.
A little bit, yeah.
I don't know if I trust that.
She and Carol Mosley Braun would have been a good fit, actually. She's now ambassador to Samoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The senator.
Yeah.
She was ambassador to somewhere else before, too.
Some were not important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Samoa.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Samoa is important.
It is.
Don't be mean.
If you're a Samoan, it's really important.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So
they
next theory.
A lot of resources down there.
Yeah.
Actually, seriously.
Next theory.
Mm-hmm. All right. Go ahead.
What's that?
Susan has nothing to... This is a long theory title. I'm sorry. Susan has nothing to do with this because Susan Lindauer isn't really that weird of a name. And also there was one of those working at the university that that email address is registered to at the time. So the website or the university that spam was sent from, the email address where that was registered at, was the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point.
Yeah, UWSP.edu. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and in spring of 1995, there's articles talking about this program that one Susan Lindauer, different Susan Lindauer, was in charge of organizing. There's like proof in the, you know, there's academic journals written about her studies that she was doing there. So we know that she was there at that time. That's where that web address is located. So it's not unreasonable to assume that it was just a hacked email address.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So it had nothing to do with crazy Susan Lindauer. Just, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was just a coincidence
somebody
that it was
randomly
the same name.
Used Susan's. Yeah, mm-hmm. quite possible.
But on the other
and
hand.
And also, she might be actually have a Usenet logon.
Mm-hmm.
But being somebody who was employed more in the physical education part of things. And
yeah.
not the more techie computer science end of things, might not have actually used it at all or not used it much, and definitely was not tech savvy enough to not let her email address fall into the wrong hands.
It's totally possible.
Oh, I got to tell you, I had an email address at that time that was assigned to me from a university, and I would check it once every week or four at the library.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
me too.
It was like, why
Susan,
would I...
Susan might have gotten this email address and never used it ever.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, yeah.
That happens a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it
especially
absolutely
back
is.
In those days.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And she was, just in case anybody's wondering about this, Susan, she worked on a program to... it was basically children's physical education for children who were delayed for whatever reason, mentally delayed.
Developmentally?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then she's... she was an assistant instructor in the SNAP program, whatever.
What's a SNAP?
I don't know. Final theory.
Yeah?
Do you guys know who Mark V. Shanley is? Shaney?
Yeah. I actually do.
Do you, Joe? Do you know who Mark V. Shaney is?
Totally. I went to school with him.
Yeah. He was a user on the Usenet forum net.singles. He was also the very first, as far as I can tell, AI bot, as far as I know. And he was based on what's called a Markov chain. Do you know what a Markov chain is?
You know, I've heard of it, but, you know, if you go out and read about Markov chains, it's pretty esoteric stuff.
Yeah.
Have what I would call a very sort of general understanding of what it is. But
I would say, yeah, abstract.
Yeah, but it's
basically, it just generates random things. It's a formula for random.
Other things that people have written, and that's about it.
Well, a Markov chain bot is that, but a Markov chain is like a mathematical process.
Assemblage of words?
Of anything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think. That's my understanding of it. But it's
almost like a chain of events is one way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next event depends on the present event, but not the present event does not necessarily depend. The relationship between past, present, and future is not necessarily a chain.
So let me simplify this.
Yeah.
There's a tree, and there is a Kleenex, and one eventually turned into the other. What happens in the middle? Don't know, don't really care.
Yeah,
sure. It's kind of that, yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, but the Markov chain bot is, it's a mathematical procedure that computers can use to create relatively realistic looking text.
With some great
responses,
humor.
Yeah, given, based on some given data. So we've actually seen a lot of those. That robot that was a Microsoft, the Twitter thing that turned into a Nazi
bot.
Oh, that one just recently.
Yeah,
everybody
the like teenage
went out
girl.
And taught it really, really bad habits.
Yeah, so she's a very advanced version of a Markov chain bot. Yeah. Very advanced, but
it's so sad what the internet did to that poor robot.
Yeah, it's really sad. Yeah.
That robot will never be the same. Yeah.
No,
no, I don't think that robot exists anymore. Mm. But that's basically that sort of thing. And Mark, actually, going back to
Mark V. Chaney.
He's actually pretty successful, but he was prone to saying things like, "I spent an interesting evening recently with a grain of salt."
I say stuff like that all the time.
I mean, I've read some of the other stuff that he said, and realistically, it could have, I mean, it was early internet days. It could have just been like a really quirky, awkward dude on the other end.
Yeah.
Or maybe even somebody who, like, English wasn't their first language.
True.
But he was pretty convincing.
Did he get a lot of dates? I noticed he was on net.singles on Usenet, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't think...
There's a story about people who, thinking that Mark was real, were at some gathering and was overheard by one of the people who had created Mark V. Chaney saying, "I wonder if Mark V. Chaney is going to be here." So yeah. people bought into it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we see these bots. I mean, you see the screen captures of like Tinder bots, for instance, right? I mean, this is the same sort of thing. But
those must be the ones that never show up for their dates with me.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It's kind of pain.
It's sad.
Yeah.
If you'd stop giving me your credit card.
Yeah.
Is that it is? Okay.
I mean, so, you know, we're talking Markovian, parallax, denigrate. Is it denigrate?
You think it's, yeah, denigrate. Yeah. You're thinking that it was just something sent up by a bot?
I kind of do, actually. I mean, Markov is in the name already, right? And, you know, something being Markovian is like a random generated string of stuff. And, yeah, I don't know. I just, like, that makes sense to me. That makes a lot of sense to me that it could just be this bot. And it, you know, was named something tongue-in-cheek and it just kind of went off the rails a little bit. But that, to me, makes the most sense. I know we've just spent the last almost hour talking about covert counterintelligence in the CIA. But I don't think so, but Steve has that look on his face.
I tried to decode this.
Oh, how'd that
just
work out
like
for
the
you?
Rest of the internet.
How did that go for you?
Quite boringly.
Mm-hmm.
And not very effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Because I looked at it and was figuring it was a what is a cipher where it's not, it's like a word switch. In other words, you put in here there's Janeiro, as in Rio de Janeiro, as in the city by the river.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, oh, well, that must mean river. So they're plugging a word in, so it's a replacement.
Mm-hmm.
So I started playing with that.
I started thinking about that, too. Like, jitterbugging is a dance. McKinley and Aber, presidents. You know,
right,
kind of
right.
Thing.
You know,
Newtonian is physics.
I did it for a while because I was curious, not that I expected to be the genius that cracked it after all this time, but just to see if there was anything there. And it's just enough.
Hmm.
It's just enough to pull you in. And I made the mistake of laying it out so that I could put three or four words under each one, you know, my guesses of what that word meant.
Mm-hmm.
And then very quickly I began to build a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, I've got it. What I had gotten was confirmation bias.
Mm-hmm.
I will admit this freely at the beginning.
It's real interesting. I mean, you know, you can find the meaning in words connected pretty easily.
Yeah, and so I see why people are so curious. What I am sad about is that only this one string of, what is it, 6, 12, 18, 24, 30-some words are remaining.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would like to see other instances of it just to see how they're assembled, you know, because if it truly was a code, you can't break the code with just the ciphertext.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you don't know what the encryption algorithm is.
Right.
I mean, one of the things that occurred to me was that the number of letters in each one of these words could represent just a number, which mm-hmm. is, of course, the number of a letter in the alphabet.
But then we need to know the book it's tied to.
Well, not necessarily. No, it could be a simple substitution cipher with numbers. But I just did a quick glance at it, and I realized doing a very, very often back of the envelope character counting that it couldn't be that.
Because it's gibberish.
Well, yeah, I mean, well,
you got a lot of real big words in there.
There's a number of large words, very few small ones, and anything like that, there's going to be a lot of representations of the letter E, and then after that, the letter A. So a lot of words are the same length, and you don't see very many of those in here. So, okay, that's out. And that's as much time as I wanted to spend on it. Yeah, but this could actually be a code, but I think it's something else entirely.
What do you think it is?
It's just a big, fat chunk of text.
Yep.
And it could have been actually an attempt to... you can think of a couple of different possibilities here. Well, one, of course, is it's just somebody wanting to annoy a lot of people by sending out this big fat chunk of text and you know, tying things up. It could have been also an attempt to break the network.
Yep.
Just let's see how much stress this network can take.
Mm-hmm. WebDriver Torso.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know what that is, right?
No.
It's those videos that were getting uploaded like insanely fast to YouTube. They were like 6 seconds and they were just like a tone and like blocks of
color.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it turned out that it was Google just testing how robust the system of YouTube is.
Exactly.
I mean,
that's kind of what I'm thinking about this. So it could have been a way to map the network and see, well, where's this going to go if I send this out? How many people, where exactly is it going to go?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a mapping thing, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, like you say, a stress test. Could have been that. Or it could have been a prankster.
Mm-hmm.
And I never did bother to actually count the number of characters in here to see if it was precisely like 255. Looks like more than 255, actually. But, you know, exactly how it, you know, if the length of the actual text block means anything at all, I have no idea. Again, if I were less lazy, I would have counted the number of characters and found that out.
Yeah, but I don't think it's worth it.
I don't think so.
The problem is with only one set of words, you're grasping at threads.
If
you had two or three more that were of different words, then maybe you could try to draw some conclusions, but you're literally just in the dark.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, without the decryption algorithm, if there even is one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this could be a really super deep one where the actual text itself means nothing whatsoever, but the code is actually in who it went to.
And I'm guessing that Susan Lindauer, the 9/11 lady, it has nothing to do with that.
No, I would agree with that. Yeah, I'd say definitely not.
That is just the internet loving a coincidence.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. So, yeah, as far as decoding this, I'm going to give it another 10 seconds, and that's about it.
Boop.
Yep. There you go. Done. Yeah. I just don't know. There might actually be an encrypted message in here somewhere. I'm too lazy to find it.
I don't think there is.
I doubt it. Yeah.
Okay.
Wait a second. We haven't talked about aliens. Are you going to, like, you know, just wrap this whole thing up without talking about aliens?
I was gonna.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about them?
I was gonna wrap it up without talking about aliens.
Oh, okay. Fine. All right. Go ahead. Wrap it up then.
Okay. Well, sorry to anybody who wanted this to be a super exciting conspiracy episode.
I think there could be something in there, but I just don't think it is.
Yeah, I agree.
It'd be nice. Then there might be, but probably not.
But probably not, yeah. Well, there will be some links to our research on the website. That website is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com. You can download and listen to us off iTunes if you're doing that. You know, subscribe, leave a comment and a rating. You can stream us pretty much everywhere, including Google Play at this point. We are on social media. We've got a group and a page on Facebook. We've got a Twitter, which is Thinking Sideways, not Thinking Sideways. And we have a subreddit that's just called Thinking Sideways. If you have suggestions, comments, questions, anything like that, you can feel free to send us an email as well. That email address is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com.
Or if you want to be super sneaky and talk about the bimbo on the show, which I know you're talking about me, and it's Bimbed, you can send it there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep trying.
Yep.
I totally saw through that.
Mm-hmm. And then if you want to buy merchandise, you can do that on our website. We've got shirts, mugs, stickers, kind of anything you could possibly want. There's links to our Zazzle and our Redbubble stores on the right hand side of the website.
Mm-hmm.
Groovy. It's all high quality. Maybe, I don't know. I hope it is.
We hope.
Yeah.
Nobody's complained yet.
Yeah. Dishwasher safe, I think. microwave safe.
I don't know about that. I'm not sure. I don't think the stickers are microwave safe.
Yeah.
I don't think so either. Well, all of that having been said, I think we're going to go ahead and just get on out of here.
Yeah, I jitterbugging Abe something, yeah.
Damn it. You took away what I was going to say.
Oh, sorry, man.
I'm going to use a back channel. It's a back channel.
Back channel. Toodle-oo, everybody.
Bye.
Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by a severed head.
Oh, yes, it is brought to you by a severed head.